You are listening to the North Peace Roundtable Podcast, your weekly podcast about theology and the Christian life. Episode 159.
Ooh, I was wondering if you checked first.
I looked it up this morning just to make sure because I knew this would happen. Thanks for tuning in.
My name that joke's like 100 episodes
I
old.
I know, man. Every time. But hey, the fans love it. They're like, oh, make a joke about Andrew not knowing what
that's right.
Anyways, or sorry, the fan loves it. My name's Andrew. With me, as always, is Cameron.
Good morning, everyone.
And Corbin.
Hello, hello.
Also a joke.
Also an old joke.
First?
Also, every time you look at me and every you get this look in your eye, and I'm like, it's not me.
Is he gonna do it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, how's life?
It's really good. We're missing Natalia. She's been gone on her grade six trip to Quebec since last Friday.
Has she communicated?
Oh yeah, every day. So they have their cell phones taken away from 9 p.m. till 8 a.m.
That's smart.
So teachers come and take them out of... They're in hotel rooms, so she's with her two little best buddies. And they come and they put masking tape on the outside of the door because, you know, the teachers are in the hall but in a different room, so then they can do room checks throughout the night to make sure no one's coming and going. So it's pretty funny.
That's smart.
But then during the day... She has to keep it on airplane mode and only allowed to take pictures and stuff. And then there's a time in the evening where she can call home.
Wow.
Kind of smart.
So, yep.
That's great.
Because they just want them to focus on what they're doing there and not be on their screens all day.
Yeah. So what exactly are they doing?
It's just a cultural experience in Quebec, obviously for French. Did you go? Were you in
something? No, I had the option to, but if I'm being completely honest, I was way too chicken.
Right. I'm not surprised there are four or five kids in the class that didn't go because
it's a long being one of those.
Time to be away and to be around people the entire time.
My older sister went, and then when the opportunity came for me, I was like one of three kids that didn't go.
Right.
And I got to admit, I remember being ripped off because it's like, they're in Quebec doing nothing. Why do we have to do schoolwork?
So it's kind of wild. Every day is something different. Yesterday they're at Six Flags. Today they're going to like Biodome and restaurants. And it's pretty wild, the itinerary every day. Today they'll be on jet boats on the St. Lawrence River, which is kind of cool, And so she's flying back. She'll be back at 3 o'clock tomorrow. We're pretty pumped to have her home.
Corland, how's the new management position?
Territory sales manager position. Yeah, it's going quite well. I know.
Assistant to the regional manager.
Kind of a big deal.
Kind of.
I mean, I don't want to.
It's going really well. I'm a couple weeks in now, and it's been a learning curve. And I feel like the first few weeks actually won't be the steepest part of the learning curve because you're that. Right now, I'm that fresh face that everybody's just like, oh, yeah, hello, yeah, good to see you. And we're not actually dealing with of substance yet. But, no, it's been really good. I look forward to the position quite a bit. I'm really enjoying it.
Awesome. Right on.
What about you, Andrew? What's new with you?
Thanks. Yeah. Well, my basement flooded
last weekend. I made a joke about you playing Jonah, and it did not land. Did you remember that? Because I called you.
I don't remember that.
I called you.
Was that Saturday?
Yeah. I called you because something wasn't.
I got 1 hour of sleep that night.
So
I'll tell the quick story. So, our house, we're fixing it now, but our house has a natural slope towards one corner of, like, in the backyard. And then just the amount of rain we got, which was insanity. But I had checked a few times over Wednesday, Thursday, because we've had small amounts of moisture when we've had heavy rains, but never like, you know, I just get a towel and wipe it up and okay, we're good. So then Friday night, it's funny because my family did a Father's Day thing because Sundays are always super busy.
Yeah.
So we're doing grain and this and that. And then I'm watching a show down in the basement, our little TV room with Molly. Molly's like, I'm going to go feed the dogs. And I, as I'm going upstairs by our mechanical room, I'm like, I should just check. And I go in there and there's like water everywhere.
Oh, man.
Like more than I'm like, oh, no.
That's a lot of towels.
So I'm like pulling the stuff out of the mechanical room because we kind of use it as our spare mattresses in there. But it's in a plastic thing, thankfully. So like pulling stuff out and I'm looking, I'm like, oh my goodness. So Molly comes in, what is happening? So we're getting my shop back.
Oh man.
And doing that and then trying to like do towels. So from 9 till I think 1, Molly was like, you just go lie down for like an hour. We'll take shifts. And then at one, she came in and my poor wife, she's like, all the towels are wet and the dryer can't keep up. I don't know what to do. Oh. So we like kind of assessed, man. And I'm like, okay, let's just put like a barrier of towels and then let's just go to bed. Cause
what do you do?
I'm like, I'm not gonna, this is pointless.
Yeah.
So then I went down at 5. Cause
it's still raining outside. At
yeah,
that
it
point.
Was still Dude. Pouring. And so then like by 5 a.m., I just kind of like tossed and turned going like, what am I going to do? Thankfully, by God's grace, the water stayed in that one
nice
main area. And then, yeah, my brother-in-law came over and for the next several hours, we took buckets of the shop vacs out and dumped it down the driveway. And it was great. So anyways.
Made it someone else's basement's issue.
Yep. I just poured it on my neighbor's yard. I'll let you deal with it. So whatever, ripped apart, took all the flooring out, and we're drying the basement out. And
yeah, we made an episode a while ago about jokes and the timeliness of them, so I had to call Andrew Saturday morning, and you answered, you're like, oh, hello, and I could tell that you were rushed, and I'd talked to one of our mutual friends who was like, yeah, I'm talking to Andrew about the basement and trying to figure it out. I was like, I hear you're trying to play Jonah, and there was like dead silence.
I'm like, yeah, what
on
do
the
you
phone.
Want, Corbin?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's an example of how not to land
man.
A good one.
You better go check your basement.
I,
but
yeah.
You know what? It's all good because many, many like of God's blessings throughout it. And I told Molly like, you know, oh, one of my four levels of my house is slightly wet. I'm like, ooh. And so like when you put it into perspective, sure. You're like, you know, people in Africa are like, oh, your entire hut was damaged. You... No, like one floor of my four levels. Yeah. The other three are fine. And they would go, what? Like yeah. You're so rich. So, and then I talked to someone who's like, hey, can you pray? My aunt and uncle went on a trip to Israel and they're stranded over there because of the war. And I'm like, huh. Okay, perspective matters.
Yeah.
Yep.
Anyways, that's not what we're here to talk about, but.
Yeah, we're going to change gears a little bit.
Yep. I was grieving my basement. Corlin, what's the topic today? No, I'm just kidding. That's so.
Clunk, clunk is right. Today the topic is something that is probably a little bit more somber than what we've talked about in
we'll
the last couple of
not.
Episodes. Of course. Yeah, the topic today, it came to mind because my wife and I have attended a couple of different grieving processes over the last few months here since 2025 rolled in. Mm-hmm. And so Aaron and I were struck by just the differences in grieving processes. And I got to thinking about some of your time in ministry with palliative care ministry, Cameron. Andrew being a pastor, you have probably seen all sorts of stuff with planning funerals and, mm-hmm. and whatnot and been thrown into this. And even for myself working at my time at the homeless shelter and some of the deaths that happened there and walking and navigating those situations with people who don't have the same hope that we do. So basically, and I think I'm going to leave it vague because I think there's a lot that we could cover and I just sure. kind of want to see where the conversation goes with it, is as Christians, I think that we can get caught in this cliche hope. Let me rephrase that. We can get caught in this cliche image of what a Christian is in these situations where we have this hope and it's wonderful. And yet we can almost forget that the next day is still really hard for the people that have lost someone sure. because while they're in heaven, we should be rejoicing. And yep. I know it's sad for you, but at least they're in heaven. And like there's pieces of truth to that. And yet, yeah, like there is really, really hard things. Like I went to a funeral this last weekend where it was a funeral for a husband. The next day was Father's Day.
Yeah, that's brutal.
Like,
that's
like
brutal.
And yeah. and so how as Christians do you navigate that? Because like.
Well, Cam, you even mentioned this Father's Day was, you posted something like, oh man, I wish I had more Father's Days with my dad.
Yeah.
Because how many years ago? 2 years ago?
It'll be 2 years in December, so a year and a half ago.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. So it's not even just like the next day, which is, it is brutal. It's mm-hmm. like you yeah. have the funeral the next day. But I've talked with people who. Even the next year, the next Christmas, the next anniversary, 5 anniversaries later, you're like, oh, and it's still like
yeah,
brutal.
So maybe a good place to start because it is a broad topic, is what do we do? How do we do as Christians? How do we step into that process where there is death imminent? Like someone is going to pass away shortly, short of God providing great healing in that scenario, on this side of eternity. How do we approach that? Like even as, let's start with just as believers, how would you guys approach that? If you are approaching someone who's about to pass away, who is a follower of Jesus and their family is a follower of Jesus, what does that look like? Like what did it look like for you? What?
Yeah, it sucks. You know, like, I don't know. I was thinking about that this in the last couple of days when you mentioned that, and thinking about my dad dying. Like, he was in hospice, right? So, like, you're sitting there knowing that they're never going to leave. And you're just kind of waiting. And, yeah, it's kind of a surreal time. And, I mean, he had peace, but also was afraid. Like, you know, had, you know, trying to, you know, for my mother, trying to make her know things would be okay. And it was wild for us because the last time I was there, my mother wasn't with us. And so then he was talking to me about like all the business end of death. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that was really wild. And I think I've shared before, but on the about 2 hours before he died, he phoned me with my mother holding the phone, and he just wanted to double check on car insurance that, you know, that it was all ready. And I was at the Pomeroy standing outside, and he just wanted to double check that. Well, actually, the doctor offered a pill on the side of the bed and said, if it gets too much, just take the pill and you'll slip away. And he's like, if I do that, will it void the car insurance for mom? Like through a really broken, I'm like, no, it won't. He didn't end up taking that pill, but I wouldn't have been upset if he did. And that's, there's a very real Christian response to playing God. And I know it can get a little tight, but this man was minutes and hours away from death and in excruciating pain due to pancreatic cancer.
Yeah.
If he took that and made it quicker, I'd have no issue. He didn't take it, and it lasted 2.5 more hours, and it was over then. So it was really interesting, the business side of it, the emotional side of it, and I actually respect him more for phoning me and asking about car insurance to double check that his wife would be okay, you know, despite all that was going on.
Do you think maybe that's part of the tension as Christians, is knowing that the people on this side of eternity are the ones that are maybe more affected by the death? Like that mourning process hits us, because I was thinking about that more recently, is that like the individual that passed away recently, I really didn't mourn for the individual that I know is with our Savior on the other side of eternity. Like there, if anything, it was like, oh, thank goodness, like you didn't have to suffer longer here.
Yep.
Because I know what it's like here. And then you look at the family and you look at the members that are going through the details, the business side of things, and let alone the grieving process.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
My grieving for my dad, I remember for a long time, you know, and if I thought about it a lot right now, I'd probably get emotional, but it was more so like, I remember saying like, you know, like that's just too bad. Like, it's just too bad. 'Cause he had a difficult life and it was a, just July to December, this
that's fast.
This diagnosis and ultimate death. But it was just a really hard time. And so I remember, you know, just feeling like that just sucks, you know, like for him and now for my mother. He was 67, so not even super old.
Yeah.
Lived, you know, he was a smoker, didn't live super healthy. So there were some inevitable consequences through that time.
Yeah.
And really just kind of connected with God near the end. So I just felt sad for his life.
Sure.
And then for my siblings who are not really walking with God, that's a, it hits harder. And just sad for my mother now, who just floats around without her partner, right? Like it all just sucks. Even if we know that our loved one could be in heaven, it's just a big massive void that just blows. And I hate the Christian cliche of suppressing that emotion, with this idea, like, we're just uncomfortable around people grieving. So we want them to just find peace and be quiet. And
you know. I want to get to what you think, Andrew, but for you, Cameron, with having done palliative care ministry, which for those of you who might not know, listeners, that's people who, essentially, who have been sent to a space in the hospital to die.
Yeah. There's nothing we can do.
It's end of life care. It's making them comfortable until they pass. And there are specific ministries in that area, and you've gotten to be a part of that. I'm not quite sure how to ask the question. Did it make those experiences seem more grounded then when you experienced it yourself? Did you recognize things that you wish or that maybe you'd change about how you walk through that ministry?
No, I sat with maybe five or six in the last 10 years. And the last one was just this guy, Peter, who sent his buddy to City Hall to come and connect with me and said, "Hey, can you come to the hospital? Peter's dying." So I go, and it's just a random guy who used the food bank once before, who I connected with a little bit. And so for the next 9 or 10 days, I just sat with him every night. We'd go to the hospital every evening and just sit and chat with him. He was dying of terminal cancer, and he was estranged from all of his family, didn't want anything to do with them. And when I worked in formal ministry, you had to respect some of those things. But since I was gone, I'm like, I didn't give a rip. So I called everyone that had a similar last name, got his daughter on the phone, and they actually brought my computer and set up a Zoom call. I'm like, "Hey, Peter, look." And it was his kids.
Wow.
And he like broke down. And then one of his cousins actually flew from Kelowna and came here. And he died that day. And me and that cousin went up, I think he was like 50 years old. We went out for dinner at Roastabouts, and I never saw the guy again. Huh. So it was really kind of transactional at that point. But this actually person had MAID done. So they had a medical assistance in dying. And I was really conflicted about that. And I remember sitting down, and the doctor came in. He had two young students who performed it. And he's like, "Oh, it's really good to see a representation of faith here for this process." I'm like, "Oh, no, I'm not here for you. I'm just sitting with Peter." And it was wild. So they start this act, and my emotions were interesting because it was like I kind of knew. Like, for all the people that I've had in my life die, many have been with cancer, the pain suppression at the end of life was kind of like, it expedited the process. Anyway, so this guy was dying, and he was looking at me. So I just held his hand, and I just felt like saying, "Love you, Dad," because he had a whole issue with his son. And so as he was dying, I just said, like, "You know, I'm not upset at you." And I just felt like talking to him as if I was his son. Hmm. And he cried, and then he died. But then I remember I had a professor, Gloria Woodland, who said, around end of life care, she said to this room full of pastors, "You know, do you feel like the Holy Spirit dwells within you? Of course. And so what does it mean to have that ministry of presence with someone as they die? Like, is that not the hand of God reaching out and giving peace in that moment?" And it's a conflicting time, because, or you can give them a conflict of faith, and you can make them afraid in those last couple of minutes. And, you know, so we had talked about faith, and I don't know where that guy stood, but I didn't feel terrible if he didn't profess Christ in that moment, because I didn't really know him very well, but he knew of me, and he felt a call out to the one person he remembers from the Salvation Army. And I prayed with him, and I reconnected him with his family, and then held his hand as he died. And I just felt it was a very important time.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, this has been episode. Yeah. So to your question, like, how do Christians, I forgot how you worded it, but essentially, yeah, how do Christians walk with people through grief and stuff? I agree that we're not very good at that. It really makes, not just Christians, death and grief and mourning makes most people uncomfortable. It's just kind of like, ugh.
Yeah.
You just don't know what to do. And I can remember a decade ago being a lot more uncomfortable, and you feel like you have to say something. And it's interesting. There's a great book by Tim Keller, Walking with God Through Pain and Suffering. I would recommend any Christian read that book, especially if you're going through pain and suffering. It's very, very good. But he looks at the history of Christianity, and Christianity in the first century, and I would argue even today, is one of the only, if not the only, worldview that you can actually process grief and suffering well. Because other worldviews, so like an atheist worldview, how do you process grief and suffering? It's pointless. It makes no difference. Like, you're just nothing anyways. And he goes through all the other major, you know, in the ancient world, you didn't process grief and suffering because you were being punished by the gods or whatever. And he's like, the Christian worldview, the Bible, actually the New Testament gives believers permission to, not even just the New Testament, the Old Testament too, gives believers permission to ask questions of God, to express anger and frustration with God, to have this kind of like deep sorrow and pain and grief and mourning. But then it doesn't stay there. Like, there's the truth, which you said, like, you know, we said like the cliche, but it's true. The hope that we have, that pain and suffering is not pointless. It's not random. It's not meaningless, right? There's purpose behind it, even in the midst of it. And then there's the hope, right? I think of, it's in 1 Thessalonians, which I often read at a graveside or at a funeral, if someone's a follower of Jesus. Of course, now I'm not going to be able to find it. Or maybe it's 2 Thessalonians, but it talks about the idea that we don't grieve as those who have no hope. We do not want you to be uninformed, brothers, about those who are asleep, meaning dead, that you may not grieve as others do who have no hope. For since we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so through Jesus, God will bring with him those who have fallen asleep or died.
Mm-hmm.
For this we declare to you that we who are alive, who are left until the coming of the Lord, will not precede those who fall asleep. And then it's like, hey, Jesus is going to come back. We're all going to be resurrected. But I just love that verse. So that's chapter 4, 1 Thessalonians 4:13. He's like, don't be uninformed about those who are dead, that you begin to grieve as if there's no hope. He's like, no, you need to like remind yourself.
Yeah.
Right? That the funeral you went to this weekend, that person is in eternity, in paradise with Jesus. So I love that Paul's saying, like, don't be uninformed. Don't forget the truth that they're not really dead. I mean, like, you have to cling to that. But we don't, like, you don't just jump right to there. And that's where Christians are so bad at grieving with people. It's like, oh, they're in this deep state of sadness and mourning and grief, and you're like, well, at least they're in a better place. And you're like, okay, that's true.
Yeah.
And there is a time to be reminded of that. Hey, like, right, we grieve with joy. So there is, that's true.
Yeah.
But it's just, we don't want to give the Christian platitudes of just like, hey, you know, buck up. It's okay.
And I think that we give those responses, like you said, because we don't know what to do.
Yeah,
we don't know what to say. And we inevitably feel like we should be doing something.
Yeah.
Right. So I saw that multiple times at this last funeral that I was at, where one of the individuals that was directly connected was grieving like hardcore and went to go walk to get something. And somebody would literally like grab the individual out of their path and then start talking to them.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah, I can remember, man,
early,
like,
on, there was a few times when a family who, I laugh now cause I'm like, what a dumb, but they would come in to talk about the funeral and I'd be like, hey guys, how are you doing? Like, how's it going? And then one lady, I think, was like, and God bless her, I think she was like, how do you think it's going? I'm like, yeah, that's probably not a great question. How's your day going? And she's like, I lost my husband. How do you think it's going? And I'm like, well, good for you, to be honest.
Yeah.
But we're just not good at dealing with the awkwardness. So I've just, you know, there's been a few times I've gone to hospital and someone's dying and you just sit with people. And I don't even say anything.
Do you think maybe that process for us as Christians needs to be more led by the Spirit rather than just like, well, I need to do this and this and this? Because, like, for example, you, Cameron, it might not be in a textbook to, you know, portray yourself as one of the guy's kids, you know.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it was something that you felt you needed to do.
Yes, Spirit led. Yep. I think, like,
but having some awareness.
I
mean,
we have to. Yeah, I was just going to say that. Having, I think, awareness. We have to say that. I'm joking. But, like, yes, of course we're led by the Spirit. But it is, I think Christians are just sometimes not self-aware like if I go in and the guy's like, and I've been in this situation, he's like struggling to breathe, and that usually is what happens. The breath, you can tell this guy's gonna die soon. And the family's all there, and I've been there. And I wouldn't just go in and be like, hey, praise God that he's going to heaven, right?
Yeah.
It's like being self-aware to be like, this is a moment of like deep sadness. So I think there can be like oftentimes if they ask or even I'll offer, would you like me to pray that God's presence would be just with us? He would comfort us as we sit here in these last moments of your husband, brother, mm-hmm. whatever life. I even reminded too, like Job, the book of Job, his friends did a lot of terrible things mm-hmm. and gave a lot of terrible advice. But I'm always struck by what they did at the beginning. Job has lost all of his kids, 10 kids killed. He's lost his health. He's lost all of his material possessions. His wife is kind of not the best. You know, just curse God and die, Job. And then his friends come and it says that they just sit next to him and for several days don't say anything.
Yeah,
I'm just gonna sit with you in your grief. This sucks. Yeah. I've said that sometimes. You go into a hospital and the wife is there and the husband's dying, and I'm like, this is terrible. I'm so sorry. This sucks. Yeah. And you just hug them, and then sometimes I just sit there. And it, believe me, it's awkward.
Yeah.
When you're like, I fight the urge to, I have to say something.
Yeah.
Because it's awkward. And just recently, there's a couple that was slightly connected to our church, had come a couple times and reached out to me. And so I went, and yeah, the husband has, I can't remember, some kind of cancer. And you can tell that the wife has slept in the hospital rocking chair for 4 days or whatever. And I just go, and it was just like, oh. And you want to say like,
yeah,
all the things to try and make you feel better. But yeah, I just hugged this poor lady. And then I did say, can I like pray with you? Prayed that God would give her sleep, that she'd be able to rest. I did. I asked, do you want me to pray that God would heal? Are you still there? Is that where mm-hmm. your mind is? No, we're believing for healing. So, okay, I can pray for that.
Yeah.
And then I just, you just sit there and it's.
I think with you saying that, asking if you can pray, I think that's something that I'm learning, even with the territory sales manager position, is in a professional environment where, with air quotations, all things are equal, all things are good. It's still considered professional to be like, hey, do you have a moment? Can I take some of your time? Instead of just rambling in and yes, doing whatever yeah. you want to do. And I think as Christians, not saying that we have to be professional with how we navigate this, but I think it is polite. Like, the funeral that I went to this last weekend was absolutely massive.
Sure.
And so even though I was directly connected with the individuals that were mourning, I spent a lot of time not going up to them and trying to speak to each one. And I felt conflicted the whole time of like, I need to say something. Yeah. But what's interesting is there was certain moments during the day, I actually only connected with a couple of them, where suddenly it was like, no, I need to go now.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And so I went.
Yep.
But then other times I'd see and it was like you'd feel that overwhelming just sadness for the people yeah. and you wanted to go and be with them. But also like at the luncheon afterwards and the events afterwards, it was nothing but a steady flow of people to of those course. People. And so for I think those are the kinds of scenarios that as Christians, there's maybe some goodness that came from the people that all wanted to go talk yeah, to sure, these individuals. Sure. But I think sometimes we don't do well at just sitting in grief and
yeah
and like grieving in that way, right?
And I think different people are wired differently. So yep. your mom, for instance, just served the whole yep. time. And yeah, that's some people are like, I have to do something because I just and yeah, okay, that's great. Make a meal, drop it off. That's some people's way of how they bless others. I'm not gonna go sit with you for hours and go through grief counseling and okay, because that's not how I'm gifted. Like some people are like, I'm just going to serve you. How can I serve you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's super helpful for sure. It's just, yeah, I'm glad you said that, Cam, the self-awareness I yeah. think we need to get better at. Like, so for instance, this is a few years ago, but, I can remember, so he won't mind, but like Peter Bergen, his wife's I can't remember the relative connection. Someone in his wife's family died, whether it was a mom, dad, grandpa. I can't remember. But this is when I was early on. And so I remember I called him. Hey, how are you guys doing? Do you want me to come over? And his response was hilarious. He's like, why would you come over? And so I'm glad that I called because yeah. it would have just, I would have been forcing my way in. Let me be a part of your grief because I'm the pastor. And it wouldn't have helped. They would have been like, this is awkward that you're here. Why are you here?
Yeah.
So it's just learning self-awareness. Some people, like if you're a close relationship with them, they maybe do want you to come over and sit with them and pray with them. And
my wife and I talked about this quite a bit, and it kind of landed for us, kind of landed on the, like, you know what, if they haven't been texting me or calling me through this process as they're leading up to the death, they probably don't want me around after the death.
Yeah.
I can maybe text and offer and be like, hey, I heard, I'm really sorry. If you need anything, let me know.
Yeah.
But you don't have to insert yourself just because you're sad too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think too, I'll say on the flip side too, we're also people who are grieving sometimes are not self-aware that people want to.
It's part of the grieving process there too.
People want to support them because oftentimes, here's what will happen in the church often. People will get mad that the pastoral staff or the church aren't supporting people enough. And then we'll go, we had no idea that that person was suffering.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, I just want to keep people away and I don't want to be bothered and I don't want to bother people. So it is like, so I'm not saying like, hey, if someone you love dies, make sure you tell everybody because we want to, but I'm just saying there's this,
it's a bit of a two-way street.
It is. Like Christians, we sometimes, we don't know how to help, but we want to help. And then flip side, Christians who are suffering are like, I don't want to bother people.
We don't know how to ask for help
either. And it's like scripture is pretty clear in Galatians that we bear one another's burdens. We weep together. We rejoice together. Yeah. I met with a lady yesterday who came and just like dumped all this stuff going on in her life. And she's like, I'm really sorry. That was a lot. And it was like, don't be sorry. Like this is part of. Yeah. You're a sister in Christ. I'm your brother in Christ. I'm your pastor. This is what we do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I'm sure there's times when I'm going to go through garbage and I need to go and I need someone to help me bear this burden. And I did say to this lady, I don't know if I have any answers for you, but I can bear the burden with you. Like, so it is a two-way street sometimes.
You know, it's interesting. Last week in my role at the city as the HR manager, I had a meeting with an individual that was a little tense, and they came, there was five of us in the room, and they came, this person came with a letter, a 2-page letter, and they said, I just want to read for you everything I've been dealing with, which would give some context as to why we're in this situation.
Sure.
I said, before you do, please review what you're about to read and do not share anything personal with me, only because our relationship in this context isn't one that I'm going to be able to support you in, because we didn't have that relationship.
Yeah.
And I said, it's just a safeguard for myself because I don't, you know, it's your private information and I'm not.
That's got to be hard as your job. Do you find that difficult?
No. Okay. No, I don't. The lady that was the lady who's going to be covering me while I'm gone for July was like, do I have to do that if that comes up? And I'm like, no, but it does come from a couple years in counseling and learning the tools in which to do that. But then it's different because in the context of a relationship or a Christian connection, then it's completely different. Like, let's truly bear that burden. But it's important to safeguard yourself also around some of that. And that's one of the things you learn through tools. So I think that if someone feels like they truly like to be more of a support to people, there are neat courses and online resources that you can prescribe to. Subscribe to that would teach you a little bit of those kind of mechanisms and tools on how to be an appropriate support. But on this vein, I was just kind of thinking, it's been actually interesting in my experience how many non-Christian families that experience death come to a church or in my context the Salvation Army. I've done far more memorials for people who have died in vulnerable situations or poor families who have no resources to go to a church. And one of the last ones, you know, Tatiana and I, we were there and we did everything right, bought the flowers and got the cookies and everything, and this whole family and friends came in, and it was just a ministry that we did for free at that time. Mm-hmm. And the scriptures that were referenced were a lot different. It was more about, you know, the peace that comes when experiencing loss and stuff.
Totally.
And never speak to that person's eternal realities. And that's, I think, a tool too, because I'm very comfortable with not giving false assurances either. Which
maybe part of your question too, like the difference between how do we walk alongside non-Christian people who are grieving versus Christian.
I wonder if we're going to dip into that, if we should maybe do that next week, because we're going to be coming up on our time here shortly, and I don't know that we'll do it justice to cover that conversation in the 5-ish minutes that we
have
left.
You guys have to leave in 5 minutes?
Are you at 7?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like we should leave that till next week if we're going to dive headfirst into the topic. I'm okay to
15 minutes.
You have to leave at 7 or you have to be there by 7?
Leave at 7.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. We got tons of time.
Quiet. See, this always happens. I don't know.
Well, and maybe
I'm going to advocate.
I don't think it would warrant a whole episode.
I mean, we spent the whole episode talking on the Christian perspective.
Sure. Yeah. And we also spent, you know, 6 minutes talking about my flooding basement. So, let's start. And then if we're like, oh, we got more on this, because I agree, like we want to do it justice. But so what I was, are you good?
Yeah.
Go into it? Okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because I think like the Christian perspective is, we do cling to the hope that we have. It is different. Like, you know, at a funeral for a Christian, it's like, it is this mix. It's this weird mixture.
Yeah.
We're rejoicing because they are with Jesus. That's fantastic. But then we're also sad.
Yeah.
With a non-Christian, I'm glad you said that, Cam, that I never want to give false hope that, oh, sure. Yeah. They're in a better place. They might be in a worse place. Like, if we're honest. So I've done a number of memorials or funerals for non-Christian people. And you say it is fascinating that they're like, yeah, we don't believe in any of that, but we want, you're a pastor, right? Can you come do the funeral? I'm like, part of me is like, why do you want me? Like,
yeah.
So there's something there, but I will often use passages about God comforting the brokenhearted. There's lots in the Psalms that God walks near people who are hurting.
Mm. Yeah.
And I'll use that rather. And there's,
but it's sorrowful. Like it's just,
it's brutal.
It's just sorrowful, it's wailing. And
yep. Oh yeah. There's, when I was a youth pastor, there was 2 funerals in 1 weekend, and it was 2 girls that had died in the same car crash, 2 friends. I can't remember the order. One was, the Christian who was a follower of Jesus. That funeral was packed, and there was balloons, and she wanted to, like, I'm celebrating, like,
yeah.
So there, it was still sad. The next funeral, it was like the most, it was depressing, because it was just literally just like wailing, and there was no hope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in that moment, though, I think the human part is like, I want to give them some kind of hope, but we have to be really careful that we just don't lie, because that's not helpful to tell people, like, oh yeah, maybe they are in a better place. At least they're not suffering anymore. But again, you can give them hope in the sense of, like, there is a God who loves you, and he's going to comfort you because you're brokenhearted, and you can draw near to him. So even I've had a funeral where someone was like, you know, where is my aunt? And I'm like, I can't answer that. I said, I don't know.
Yeah.
I honestly can't answer that. And oh, well, I think on their deathbed, they maybe prayed. Okay. But I'm like, and I could tell that person was really disappointed.
Yeah.
I said, I just can't give you false hope. I can't answer that. I'm sorry. And they were like, because they want something. Give me something to cling to.
I think we can easily, as Christians, fall into the, like on the other side, talking about non-Christians, I've heard so many stories where somebody's grieving the death of a loved one. And the very first question that gets asked, instead of how are you doing, or like, do you need anything, for the person on this side is, were they a Christian? It's like, no. Oh, I'm so sorry. It's like, oh, but you weren't sorry before if they were? Like you said, self-awareness. Like, why? I think I can understand from a Christian point of view that, like, we find comfort in knowing if somebody is with Christ afterwards. Sure. There is comfort in that. And maybe eases some of the sorrow, but at the same time, to just approach someone that you maybe haven't seen in 30 years and ask if their loved one who just died is in heaven or hell is kind of a harsh way to start that conversation.
Sure. Yep.
You know, it's wild. The last two funerals I was a part of, one was my dad. So I led that, and it was 15, 18 of us at the graveside in a really special time in my hometown family plots, buried next to my uncle who had died the year before. So they were cremated.
At the same time.
Yeah.
It was one ceremony for both.
No, my uncle had a ceremony. I guess I did that one. Spoke at that one too when he passed in Winnipeg at a church. But then before that, the last one I did was in Dawson, where a family called me because their transgender son committed suicide.
Oh, wow.
And it was a massive like church full of people. And I knew the guy who passed, and the most lonely person ever. But then the service was packed with people crying in suits and in a beautiful church in Dawson. And it was just so fascinating how this broken human had all of these folks show up at the end. And then you see sometimes, Christian funerals being different or being a lot more organic by nature in many circumstances, because maybe that reality is a little different. But mm-hmm. I don't know. I had a couple people ask me why I would do that. And Christians struggle with multi-faith spiritual care because they don't understand. I don't believe they understand the importance of the value of the people that are sitting there, and that if we have this invitation into brokenness, then we should take it all the time. And I remember maybe I didn't struggle as much working in the hospitals because I didn't have such a rigid view, but a lot of evangelical pastor colleagues who were pastors first really struggled with the thought of going room to room and sitting with people who may not be Christian without the urge to convert them in their final day.
Sure.
But I just remember, at that particular service, again, just talking about, you have this invitation for people to ask, why do you seem to experience peace? And then that is where you can evangelize fully, because it's my reality.
Yep.
And if yours is different, fine. And I think that's been a far more effective tool, at least for me personally, over the last 10 years, much less now, 'cause I'm out of that world a little more, but
yeah.
If someone phoned today and asked me to do it, I would, just because I feel comfort in the space. I don't mind
being
around people dying.
I think as Christians, we should appreciate what you had said earlier, Cameron, too, where if we believe that we're indwelt with the Spirit and we're invited into a space of chaos and death, why would we not be confident in that? Mm-hmm. To just sit and trust that the Spirit can do what the Spirit wants to do there.
Yep.
That conflicts with so much of what Christians believe, but I find it so crazy.
But it's true, because even at Pentecost, like all of the symbolism behind like the flaming tongues of fire is consistent with where God's presence dwells. Like even on the Mount Sinai, there was fire on the mountain. The Israelites are led by a pillar of fire. And so the symbolism of a tongue of fire landing on the people that God is dwelling with is huge. So if we take that and we understand that God is dwelling with us and we enter a space where there is darkness, then maybe it's not that we need to just reach out and instantly slap them in the face with the gospel. It's not that the truth isn't truth. It's that maybe the context is important, and maybe they've heard the gospel, and maybe this is a moment where...
And maybe it's not. And I often thought that, what if God, through his just amazing grace and his, I think of Jesus weeping at the thought of Lazarus, although knowing he was coming back, what if God sends people like hospital chaplains to sit with those who are destined to hell because he's weeping for them? Because
interesting.
That's a wild theology and it's not unpacked, but
In the Old Testament, God says, I have no pleasure in the death of the wicked. I think that's Ezekiel.
So imagine sitting there
and
like holding this Peter's hand. He was hated a lot to do with the church, hated God in a lot of way, but I got to hold his hand and look in his eye and said, I'm here. I'm with you. Like that's pretty wild. And that's not to say anything about the people who do that. But what if that's God's grace, that there's this entire ministry around just sitting with the wicked as they die, because it still sucks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like maybe Jesus still weeps for them.
Yeah, I get the, for the Christian listening, I get the urge. We're not saying it's wrong to have an urge to share the gospel with people. I think that's a good urge, because we want people to not go to hell.
Sure.
I get that. But again, it's just this self-awareness of like, okay, is this an appropriate space to do that? Right. And then it's being led by the Spirit. If God opens a door for you to actually share the gospel. So it's not wrong. We're not saying like suppress the urge to want to tell people about the life-giving power of Jesus. Like, no, it's not wrong. But again, like, yeah, I'm going to walk in and be like, repent, sinner. That might not work.
Just walk me through how Jesus did that on the cross to the guy beside him. Like, walk me through that, because we can't, we have to leave room for the fact that God will invite anyone.
Totally.
And I love the meme where it was the pearly gates in St. Peter. It's like, how did you end up here? It's like, I don't know, man. I was just crucified for theft.
Yeah, I think I'm in the wrong place. Right. Yeah.
What are you doing? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and I think that there is, the urge is maybe not a wrong thing. We should feel that urge, whether it's somebody's about to pass away or whether,
sure,
as far as we know, they have lots of life left. But I think we can approach those situations trusting that God has done work in that person's life up until this point.
For sure.
And if there's opportunity, to seize it. So like I've heard stories of people that have walked into the palliative care rooms with individuals passing away shortly and just walks in and, do you guys need prayer? I don't know. Like, these people, you have no idea who they are. Mm-hmm. And even if you did, like, if you did know, you'd maybe know this family wasn't at a place where that's an appropriate, with quotation marks, question.
Yeah.
You might have mm-hmm. actually gotten to pray with them had you walked in and started talking to them first.
Yeah. Do you want to hear the most awkward death thing I had in the hospital?
Always.
I mean, you can tell me what you would have done. But I get a call. I have no idea who this person is, this individual who's dying, right? And in a lot of pain. Can you come meet with me? Yep. So I went to the hospital, and this person said, another pastor, and I won't name them, came in and said, this guy's not a Christian. This other pastor came and met with me and said that if I became a Christian, God would take away all my pain and suffering before I died. Is that true? I'm like, thanks a lot, Pastor so-and-so, because that's not true.
Yeah.
And here's this guy in pain and suffering. And Pastor so-and-so said, like, if I give my life to Jesus, I'll still die, but I won't have any pain and suffering. And so I just had to say to this guy, you should give your life to Jesus, but your pain and suffering might be worse. It's not a guarantee. Like, you might actually get more pain. And he was like so disappointed.
Yeah.
And I felt really bad, but I'm like, I'm not going to lie to this guy. And he didn't, with me, as far as I know, he wasn't like, but yeah. I just told him the point of giving your life to Jesus is because of who he is and how great he is. And that he would save you and that he loves you and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But your pain might become 1,000 times worse. I don't know.
But there was an opportunity. The question was posed. You didn't just walk
talk
in.
Talk about the awkwardness. Of like, I had no idea. I walk in and that's the bomb that's dropped. I'm like,
yeah.
And in that moment, it's like, do I just say yes so that he gives his life to Jesus? And I'm like, I can't lie to this guy. So I'm like, no. I'm like, unfortunately, that person lied to you. That's not true.
Yeah. That's called morphine, and the doctor will be over in a few minutes.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
I think as Christians too, to navigate that with people who aren't believers, there is something very powerful about someone who mourns well.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Right. And so if we have hope personally, and even can see the value of the people in that room and honor and respect them as image bearers of Christ or image bearers of God who have fallen, then there is an element where we can navigate that a bit differently, I think, than just walking in and being just sad. Right. Like, there is a difference there.
Yeah. Christians mourn differently. It's true. That's the First Thessalonians. We have hope. And I've talked with lots of people who you know, the nursing staff, the doctors, they who are not believers, they can't wrap their minds around the kind of peace. Even so, you know, when Caleb died, that's Don Bandman's grandson.
Yeah.
That would be 8 years ago now, 9 years ago. I'm not going to give the whole story, but yeah, like 2-3 weeks old and died. And the peace that the parents had and the family had, and there were stories of the nurses going, I don't understand how you guys aren't just like falling apart and screaming and wailing. And they're like, we have hope. We have peace. We have a God who loves us. He's with us. And like, so you're right. It's a huge testimony to the world that watches, not just like, and this is what slightly drives me crazy of like, we pray and we're like, oh, but if this person was healed, it would be a huge testimony to the doctors. Yeah, potentially, for sure. Yeah. But if that Christian then dies well, that also is an unbelievable testimony. It both, right? Yeah. It's not just, oh, the only way people will come to know Jesus is if this person is miraculously healed. Well, perhaps, but also if they die with peace and trust and rest, that can draw people to Jesus.
I'd argue more so. Yeah.
I think so.
I think there's a line in the Bible that is applicable in a lot of different ways, I think. The concepts behind it anyways. It's when Joseph sees his brothers.
Yep.
And he says to them, what you intended for evil, God intended for good.
Yep.
So we take a death, something that is broken and because of evil, and God can use for his good.
Yep.
And I find a lot of peace in that. The for questions sure. then of why did this happen to this person? This is this. Like, I think a person can obviously still wrestle with it felt too soon or this happened yeah, or sure. this. Why now? Why this? But I think there is, in my opinion, I think there is a peace that a Christian carries knowing that whatever is happening here, God is and can use for his good and his glory.
Yep.
And so to rest in that and ask, even invite God to show you what he's doing through it, right? Sure. To not just wonder.
That's good. Maybe we'll leave it there for now. We can always come back to it next week if we want. But I would suggest that book, Walking with God Through Pain and Suffering by Tim Keller. I would suggest every Christian needs to read that book. It helped me a ton when I first became a pastor and was like, how do I do this? How do I help people to deal with pain and suffering and grieve and mourn? So it's a really good book. And he gives some very practical, like, here's how you walk through with people and with your own self. So, definitely check that book out. But episode 159. Oh, I guess I should say too, on a serious note, if you are dealing with grieving and pain and suffering, please reach out. Don't think that like, oh, I don't want to be a bother, or, you know, I can deal with it on my own. This is why one of the reasons we have a church is that we walk together through the suckiness of life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so please, if not to me, someone in the church, again, yeah, there's so many believers that want to walk with you. So don't suffer alone. So please reach out. And that's it for this episode. And we will talk to you next week.